You listen to Crime Scene Today. I'm your host, Dan Zintek. We talk about future and current issues facing law enforcement, crime scene, and forensics. Today I have Cotton. He's a captain at Bel Air PD in Texas, and wanted to bring him on. We had met at one of the leadership trainings a few years back now. We're continuing this leadership series that we've had. We had a couple people on talking about different aspects of leadership, and there's a couple things we're going to talk about on this episode. Some leadership training, some specific to Texas and others from nationwide, some other things helping officers that are offered here at some of those same trainings. So if your purpose in listening is talking about some mental health and support for officers and critical incidents, that's going to be a little bit later in the podcast. You can just fast forward to that if you're looking for it. So I appreciate you coming on, Jeff. Thank you so much. We met at LEMIT. Okay?
We did.
So the acronym for LEMIT. Okay, I'm going to test you here. So what's LEMIT?
Law Enforcement Management Institute of Texas.
Okay, so that's out of Sam Houston State University. And I wish I knew the detailed history of it, but I know it started many years ago. It was Texas legislature that actually funded and put it together.
The Bill Blackwood Institute, yeah.
Yeah, so it actually is three different universities,
right,
over the course of 9 weeks teaching different leadership. So we started at Texas A&M.
That's right.
And
the Mays Business School.
Mays Business School. And that was pretty cool because the instructors were not law enforcement.
That's correct. They were all professors, college professors.
So these are the same people teaching the MBAs and all business instruction to people at Texas A&M, certainly highly recognized school here in Texas and nationwide. So out of that, I remember us talking about budget and talking about some futures of business, business management in general.
Right.
You know, some instructors that stood out with different projects and things. But it's a total of 9 weeks. We do three at A&M. And
which really, to your point, was really the management kind of aspect of leadership, managing the organization, teams, holding meetings, budget, you know, those kinds of things. The mechanical side of leadership really was what we focused on at A&M, as I remember.
The one thing that stuck with me, I mean, there are many things. There's tons of lessons that we learned across it. But one of the instructors went by Dr. Seuss, mm-hmm. Okay, and amazing instructor. But the one thing that really struck me, because we talk about different personalities in there and between extrovert, introvert, and those type of things, is sometimes labeling that. A lot of people just think it's, well, an extrovert is someone that is very comfortable around people. And I remember Dr. Seuss asking, what do you think I am? Because she was very dynamic, very energetic in
her
class.
I remember this.
And they asked her, what do you think I am, introvert or extrovert? Now, by her actions, pretty much everybody say extrovert.
Extrovert.
Right? And she said, no, I'm an introvert. But then she defined it in a way I'd never heard before, but was a great explanation. And that was a introvert gets their energy from being alone. Where do you get your energy from? You need silence. You need to be by yourself to recharge. Okay? You going to a party, you teaching a class, you speaking to a group drains you.
Absolutely.
And when you leave there, you are exhausted.
Yep.
And you have to go and recharge. An extrovert, on the other hand, gets their energy from being around other people. Where do you get your energy from? And so when they go to that same party, when they teach, when they leave, they're on an adrenaline high. Okay, they are excited about that. That's how they get. You put them alone in a room, okay, and they are drained. They have to go find people.
To energize themselves. It's interesting that you bring that up because we hadn't actually talked about this before. But I remember that exact analogy that she used, and that explanation spoke directly to me. I actually am an introvert, and most of the people that know me, including my mother, didn't believe it. And I found out this introvert tendency in myself through the personality assessments we took during the Command College program. And that explanation that she gave us really spoke to me because it was what I had personally experienced but never understood why. And my wife is actually an extrovert. And so she loves being in the crowd, loves being around other people, and doesn't understand why I want to go home early.
Right.
You know, and now I understood too from that, you know, how the introvert-extrovert thing works. And of course, we learned too that it's a sliding scale. I mean, you can be an introvert, but not be, but be more centrally located on that scale as opposed to an extreme introvert, which is what I think a lot of people stereotypically envision when they hear introvert.
Well, I think with all personality tests, Myers-Briggs, and all the many ones that are out there,
right,
that all of them come to the same conclusion, that you have certain traits that you lean more towards, but everybody possesses all the traits, and you will need to use them throughout whatever the situation may be.
Absolutely.
And certainly as you raise up in a leadership position, it is more often that you are going to have to break out those different personalities, whether it is to instruct a class, whether it is to meet before a city council, to advise a project, whatever it is, you have to be the leader, which does mean you have to organize a group of people, motivate, influence those people. And so even though it may not be your strong suit, you possess it. It just means you have to dig deeper to develop that type of
Absolutely. It's a learned behavior and a learned skill set. And, you know, an introvert who is, for instance, finds himself in an executive leadership position is going to have to do public speaking. It may drain them, but they'll learn to do it and may very well do it really well. And that was kind of Dr. Z's situation where she had learned to do it so well to the point that you really didn't even see the introvert side of her, you know,
well, I found it unusual that they even made the statement that it is not uncommon. It actually is more common that your CEOs and your higher-ups are more introverts mm-hmm. than they are extroverts. You know, I'm not real positive the reason. I don't know if it's more the analytical. I don't know if it's pausing to not jump into the middle of it till you do those things. But it sort of took me back because you would think, as we've learned along the way of networking, like, oh, it must be the person who comes in, owns the room, shakes the hand, this, that,
right.
other. And that's not always the case as you move up. But that was the first module. And then second, we headed to Denton.
Right, Texas Women's.
To Texas Women's. I know the focus there was constitutional law and fitness. So you remember anything there that stood out from that particular part of the training?
We also were exposed to some transitional things where police leaders had moved into civilian positions and what that kind of looked like, which helped us to understand some of the relationships that at the command and executive levels, you have to start to deal with people outside the agency in a very different way. Now you're dealing with the civilian leadership of your given governmental body, whether it's a city council or a commissioner's court or a school board. And so they began to expose us to that as well. And I really actually enjoyed both the constitutional law, which is sort of a favorite sort of subject of mine anyway, but that expanding your sort of perception of that area of influence you have to learn to operate in.
There was a lot about politics. There's a lot about resources, and I won't say fighting for the resource, just the understanding
right.
that politics is all about who gets what, when, and making sure that it's still towards the mission
Absolutely.
Of the city, the county, whatever you're working for. You're a part of that, but how that all comes together.
And also the mechanical, kind of the mechanical pieces of an organization and how you have inputs and throughputs and outputs and environmental influences and things like that. And they sort of broke that down for us as well.
Now, after leaving there, we went to SAM, which is the home of LEMIT,
mm-hmm.
where the building is and where all the administrative stuff from LEMIT comes from. And there is when we had more of a criminal justice aspect. We had
right.
people from criminal justice, not all police.
No.
There were some that had doctorate learning research type of criminologist in there, but there was, I would say probably a larger portion that were either police chiefs,
former
administrators,
police chiefs,
they had experience in the field. And usually it's covering the current police issues at the time, whatever's currently going on. I mean, there's certainly a foundation that's always going to be discussed, but it's really what's happening at that point. Now, one of the requirements, I think, so the requirement to get into LEMA, is it still a sergeant level that you have to be?
First-line supervisor minimum.
First-line supervisor. Now, I recently experienced this, and I know that there's been a long wait to get in. A lot of people that are interested in it. It is pretty much a standard here in Texas as a professional development. If you plan on being in an executive role later in Texas, you've gone through or will be going through a LEMA. But the wait is about 3 years to get in.
Yeah.
And the one thing that recently experienced, we had a sergeant that just recently promoted. And so by our policy, sergeants have to go through LEMA. That's actually in our policy. He applied and got a letter back saying, you don't meet the qualifications. You have to have been a sergeant at least 2 years. So I don't know if that's something new to try to curb the amount of people that are
pull out some of the applicants. You know,
but that was something new. I know that, again, it's about a 3 year wait there. The other standard I would say is a national standard would be going to the FBI NA. If
no
you
question.
Look at executive stuff, then they will request that you've been to the FBI NA or other leadership, such Southwestern, and there's a couple other ones out there.
Yeah, Southern Police Institute, yeah.
Right. But same, it's about 3 year wait, okay?
Yeah.
So to get on those lists to do that, you have about 3 years. And to get an idea of how scarce it is to go to the FBI National Academy, what they do is at each regional office, so we both work near Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And so Houston, Texas FBI office gets to send four people to every class. And that's happening around the whole nation at every FBI office. They all get to send based on their populations and whatnot on how many they send. Texas is always a very big showing. I know when I went in our class, I think we had 16 people from Texas, which tells you, Texas, a large state, only 16 are going. But as compared to other states, it was just one or two, those type of things. So it is, again, a competitive arena to get into. But the LEMA's 9 weeks, FBI National Academy is 10 weeks. Now, one of the big differences between the two is that the National Academy, you're there for 10 weeks. You are in the middle of a Marine base. It's at Quantico. In the middle of the Marine base is the FBI Academy. I think one of the differences, benefits, otherwise, is that going through LEMA, you have 9 weeks, but they're separated 3 weeks at a time.
That's right.
And you may not go with the same people all the way through, which is good and bad. You get to learn more and see more people along the way, but there's certainly a connection of living with the same people for 10 weeks.
That's right.
Right. Everyone at LEMA is Texas, where the National Academy is just at. There were 24 different countries represented when I went. And again, over the course of 10 weeks, you learn a great deal about their culture, their countries, those type of things. It is set up more as a college instruction in the sense that where LEMA, everyone takes the same class. It is a design curriculum where the NA, you have to take fitness and you have to take leadership. Those are the two that are required. But then you get to choose from a catalog of basically college classes that are taught at the National Academy in forensics or psychology, in other drug enforcement, different types of specific criminal or psychology type of things that the behavioral unit that the FBI deals with. So it's very unique to that person as you go through. Both offer college credit. LEMA offers master's degree credit and undergrad, same with the National Academy. Now, coming back to Texas, another option, one reason why I think this is a great option and I want to talk about it. Texas Police Chief Association also has a program. And the one reason why I think it's beneficial is there is no wait.
Right.
You know, so when you have people that truly need some training, they've gotten put into a supervisor role, and, you know, we're lucky enough that at the departments that we have decent-sized departments where there's a process of promotion. They usually have been mentored along the way. They've had some training along the way. But let's be honest, there's some agencies out there like, you know, they were not an officer for very long, and now they're a sergeant.
Right.
And they've received no leadership training whatsoever. TPCA, Texas Police Chief Association, has something they call LECOP. And you know that one?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. That one's, because that one, I'm still learning that one. So what's that one?
That is a law enforcement command officer program.
There you go. All right. So,
but really that is a next level beyond what the class that we're currently taking now is. And that is that developing future leaders, which I think is what you're alluding to in terms of something you can get into right away.
Right. So they have 12 classes total that they offer.
Right.
And
2-day classes mostly.
Yep. Right. They have 6 that are mandatory, mm-hmm. and then you choose between 4 others, and that's sort of their program.
Right.
Yeah, a majority of the classes, and that's one nice thing about it, the majority of classes are 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
They teach them all throughout the state. If you're in the Panhandle, if you're down in West Texas or in East Texas, they have something near you,
right.
which takes away from having to get a hotel. You can usually drive to one of the classes, so it saves on time. You're only gone for 2 days versus many of these others that you're gone for weeks. And I will be the first to say, in going through many aspects of all of these programs, they are all different. They all certainly center around the foundations of leadership and
right.
things that benefit there, but all are different in their own way and things that they offer. I can't really say that one is better than the other, because I've had people ask me, says, if I'm only going to one, which one, you know? And reality is,
say, yeah,
it's hard, because all of them are beneficial.
Well, and really, you know, leadership development is a lifelong journey. And so, you know, committing to being a lifelong learner is one of the tenets of good leadership. And so kind of talking about how long it can take to get into the Command College at LEMIT or National Academy, I would encourage anyone that's getting into law enforcement supervision to start the process early, because you know it's going to take time. But one of the things that I like about Texas Police Chiefs program is that even the 2-day classes, now this 3-day or the 3-week Developing Future Leaders class, which is it's 3 weeks, it's broken up into 1 week at a time. So you do 1 week per month for 3 months, and you finish that kind of foundation class you need for LECOP. But even by itself, it's very helpful for new supervisors and kind of the mechanics it goes into about leadership. But what I like about the 2-day classes that we've experienced together, even here recently, is that they talk about good leadership principles, even in those little 2-day classes that may have a focus on something a little bit more drilled down. And that really is a key to the leadership development within the law enforcement profession, is getting the concepts, the principles, the philosophies, and the language, the vocabulary, standardized across the profession. Well, people understand when you're talking about leadership and you're using terminology that the guy next to you understands what you're saying. And so that's one of the things that this TPCA program, I think, offers, is even the smaller classes, you're beginning to be exposed to professional, intentional leadership development principles that you'll just go deeper and deeper into as you go to these other longer things like the Developing Future Leaders or LCC at LEMIT or the National Academy.
So now, one that really stood out to me that I took from the 2-day class, and I think it just speaks to one of my interests, passions, whatever you want to call it, and I'd wrote my paper on it when we were in LEMIT, was just accountability. And we talk about meeting with our people and relationships with our people and evaluations. And they had a course on evaluations through TPCA. It was a 2-day course. And in going through it, I felt that all of our supervisors in my agency should go through it mm-hmm. to have a true understanding of what you should be doing and evaluating someone for their growth, for their potential, for, you know, addressing some problems, but not holding them down because of those problems and how to overcome those, and truly how to document those in a way that is beneficial for the organization, it's beneficial for them. But again, I think that's missing. When I would ask many people, when I would be teaching or otherwise in leadership, I would say, how many people do yearly evals? Everybody would raise their hand. I said, now keep your hand up if you feel they're beneficial in any way. Okay, everybody would lower their hand, right, which is very sad for the purpose of what they truly should be. I think that TPCA really covered that. I think they really explained the true purpose behind them, the benefit of them, how to do them, what challenges that you could face in doing them, how to overcome those challenges. And I feel that that's really sort of the outline for a lot of their courses. Whatever the topic is, you know, it's the purpose behind it, how to do it, challenges that are faced, how to overcome those challenges. And I think we see that in all of the courses.
I think you're right. And you know, what I've been pleased to see too is a very employee-centric, employee growth-centered approach to the leadership principles and the way that they are presented through each of these kind of specialized classes, that they really are encouraging this new generation of leaders to be one that have a growth mindset in terms of both the employee and the agency. Rather than just do as I say and don't ask questions, they're really teaching you to understand employees as people, as human beings, and how to tap into their motivations, both intrinsic and extrinsic, how to get them to be to grow in the way that they feel satisfied so that their contributions to the overall mission are as good as they can possibly be. And that's really has been something for me that gives me great hope for the direction of our profession in the future.
There's also not a time restraint on that. So
that's a good point.
Limit that you're back to back with these things, you're trying to complete a certain time frame. Obviously, 10 weeks you're away for the NA. This is sort of on your own time frame. If you got things that come up, there'll be another class next month.
Yes.
There'll be another. You know, even the 3-week one, we've seen where people were taking the 1 week a month and had to skip a week because
right.
if something came up, they just went somewhere else, took that second week.
Yeah.
So all that is great benefit of that program. And I look forward to seeing it grow. It seems to have gained in popularity as they've developed it here in the past year or so, even though some of the classes that they're teaching have been around for many years. In all of those, and I'll put them in comments and such. If you are in law enforcement and looking to receive any of that leadership training, whether it's through the TPCA, LEMIT, or National Academy, and we'll put those down so that you can have access if that's something that interests you or your organization. So another thing that, and one of the reasons specifically why I had Jeff here, is LEMIT offers a couple of other training and benefits to officers at Sam Houston State. A couple of things that they do is their constable development, new police chief development, but the one specifically that I want to bring you on to talk about is critical incident and helping officers get through some critical incidents. I know that you've been involved in that process and,
yes.
and helping officers stuff. If you could explain sort of that program and what, I guess, how it was created or otherwise there.
So the name of the program is a Post-Critical Incident Seminar, or PCIS. This program was actually started about 20 years ago and over on the East Coast in the Carolinas. It's an adaptation of a military program. It is a 3-day seminar, very intensive seminar, that is open to first responders in Texas. It's actually open to all first responders, so EMS, fire, and police and dispatch. It started off as just for law enforcement, but the officer and their spouse or significant other is welcome and encouraged to attend. But this is really about officers who have been through a critical incident. And so you say, well, what is a critical incident? Well, it's not defined beyond how an individual reacts to a scene. Now, when this program first started, adapted from the military, it was pretty much shooters, right? Officers who had been involved in an officer-involved shooting, an on-duty shooting of some type, and trying to address their reactions or psychological reactions, and from the psychological, the physiological reactions to that, to the stress, the critical incident stress. But over time, we've learned that there's a lot more to this job than just, say, a shooting. And so now what we see is people coming through with, say, child death scenes, ICAC investigators who have been looking at child abuse cases for years and years. We get a lot of duty deaths and officers that are there experiencing the traumatic grief of the loss of a fellow officer. It's cumulative. We get officers, 20 and 30 year veterans, that maybe their critical incidents weren't one big one, but an accumulation of all of these things over time. And so what they do is they come and there is an initial first day large group where everyone in the class, and it's about, including spouses, the groups run anywhere from 22 to 30, okay, pretty much. And this is a peer-driven program. So what do I mean by peer? Peers are fellow officers and spouses who have been through critical incidents of their own with negative reactions to that critical incident and have experienced that stress. And they have been through this very program, this three-day program, as a participant, as a student, if you will, and then went back, received additional training in how to support recovery and processing through these critical incidents. And then they come back and they facilitate this program. So they teach modules of instruction that is part of the program. They lead small groups. They share their own stories. And that's really the power of the peer, is these are peers who've actually been there. And so in the blood and the mud, if you will. And so the power of their participation is the sharing of their own journey, what they went through and how they made it through and what worked and what didn't work. And so the program isn't about telling you what you need to do. The program is really more about helping you understand perspective of how we react to critical incidents, how critical incident stress affects us and our families, and then what are the tools we can use to get through that, and what have some other people experienced and how they went through it. And so this...
Do you think that part of the, part of the healing, part of coming to this is with those stories, with the peer response, is that they're not alone, that what they're
no
feeling
question.
Is normal?
Absolutely.
Others have felt what I'm feeling, others went through the same dreams, reactions, all those things. And so this is not, obviously the experience is individual to myself, but what I'm feeling is not individual.
You really hit the nail on the head there, because it's not about so much that what I said in the beginning, it's not about the incident itself, but rather about how you reacted to it. And what we see is even people who've been through similar situations and not have had a reaction, and then they go through 5 years later another one, and this one really bothers us for whatever reason. And so so you gain an understanding of how normal reactions to these things can be, and that it's all based on the individual time, individual facts or details about the incident, maybe a time in your life. There's all these different factors that can factor into why you had a reaction. But the good news is there's ways through it. There's ways to process this. There's ways to get back to your new normal and to help your family along the same way.
You know, I think one of the reasons why we feel that way, why we think that way, is there's other people on the scene, right?
That's right.
And so, and I know I experienced this a lot in going through a homicide and such, is you would have a scene. You have other detectives. You have other crime scene on there. And it would bother one person, but it didn't bother another, right? So the person that bothered is thinking, why is this bothering me? Right,
yeah.
What's wrong with me? I mean, everyone else is fine.
You bet.
Right? But the reality is, what I usually find, for one, as you said, is cumulative of many things. And this is just finally the one that really came together. The other and very common one is if you have a child that is near the same age.
Oh, you bet.
That is... you know, murdered, killed in a car wreck. If you can somehow associate this person to someone in your life and you make that emotional and direct connection, the impact on you becomes very personal.
It does. I mean, and this happens without you realizing it. I mean, it's an unconscious sort of connection that your mind will make. And but there are some really good techniques to help you kind of get through that. And really what the program is about is just helping you change perspective. We don't help you forget or anything like that. It's just putting things into perspective and understanding that it was simply an incident you were involved in. It's not who you are. It's not your identity, and it doesn't control you. And helping you get through that and doing so by utilizing peers and mental health professionals who understand from a personal perspective what it's like to go through these things. Is really why we've seen so much success. We've done this program since 2012 was when we first started. Since then, we've had, I think, 42 PCISs in the state of Texas. I've actually been fortunate enough to travel to other states and help them get their PCIS programs off the ground. And we've just seen such amazing success with just cops helping cops. And just talking to each other about it, it has so much power.
Well, it seems to me that 3 days would not be enough to do it. So there has to be more to it than the 3 days. There's got to be follow-up, or what's beyond 3 days? 3 days seems very short.
Sure, right. And the program, it's a very almost copyrighted design kind of deal that they've figured out that works really well. And a lot of times what people do need is kind of what you alluded to, and that's that sort of normalcy, like normalizing their reaction. And that alone is enough to break them loose and let them start processing this. So we have to understand that getting through a critical incident it takes sometimes years to get back to how you felt normal again. But it doesn't mean you're not functional. It just means you're moving forward. Oftentimes we see people come through the program who are stuck, and in 3 days you can get them moving again. But we also use some other techniques. One of the things is the large group, where you talk about in this very kind of safe space, to use a millennial term, all right, where you can share your experience with other people who've had similar experiences. Small groups delve deeper into your reactions and then what your plans are going forward. So we sort of help you figure out your own plan going forward as you're going to leave at the end of the 3 days. In addition to that, we have mental health professionals who work with law enforcement, understand these things, and they meet individually with each of the participants as well and allow them to sort of work on some therapeutic perspectives about what they've experienced. And they also use a technique called EMDR. That's okay. Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing.
Yeah, that's easy to say, right?
All right. Say that three times fast. And what it basically does is it helps. They actually discovered this with Vietnam vets back in the 80s, this technique. But it helps your brain to process whatever this critical incident, if it's kind of stuck in the forefront of your mind, and it's kind of all you think about all the time, or it's very invasive in your thoughts. It kind of helps you to break loose the emotional reaction to that experience and lets you sort of process it into just a memory where it should be. And so they believe that it works similar to REM sleep, when we are in our deepest levels of sleep and our eyes are moving back and forth. They believe that that is the brain processing the day's events. And so what this does is kind of intentionally force that process in a conscious state. So that's one of the tools that they use. The instruction that we do, there's a block of instruction on relationships, on law enforcement relationships. There's instruction on coping and resiliency, a search for meaning, like trying to find meaning in this experience that you've been through. There's physiological reactions to things. There's a section on wellness from a nutritional and supplement perspective. So we kind of talk about a lot of different things that sort of loads the participant up with just information, just data, so they can understand better what it is that they're going through. And kind of to your point, that a lot of their reactions are perfectly normal. That, you know, if you break your leg, you don't expect to be better the next day and go back to work. You know it's going to take time to get through it. And you know that even 6 weeks later, when they take the cast off, that you're still going to have a little rehab, a little work. It's going to take you a year before you're really back to where you were before your leg broke, right? But we do. We tend to not give ourselves that kind of time frame for psychological and critical incident type stress. But the truth is, that's exactly what happens. And this 3 days is really an opportunity to kind of focus on making sure we're moving forward in the healing process and sort of being stuck in the same place.
So you talked about having 40-something in Texas and developing. So now, is this something unique in Texas? You talked about traveling out to other states and doing this. It started in California.
No, it started in the Carolinas.
Carolinas,
North and South Carolina. Virginia, Oklahoma, New York, Arizona all have programs now. Louisiana has started one now. Ours started in 2012, but I think 12 years before that is when the Carolinas started. And so it has slowly grown across the U.S. as they've seen kind of the power of this. You know, when Lehmet first took this on, they found out about it, and Dr. Watkins, the executive director of Lehmet, really wanted to bring this to Texas, and there was no funding for it. And so, so those of us who were peers at the beginning really went out and had to raise funding to put one of these things on. Now we are actually funded through the governor's office. They fund this program for Lehmet. And so that's allowed us to put a lot more of the programs on. It's allowed them to put them on remotely. Texas is such a large state that expecting people to drive from the Panhandle or from West Texas all the way to Huntsville is a lot to ask for. And so so now they do them remotely. They'll hold them out in West Texas, down in South Texas, up in the Dallas area. And so so that's all been made possible because the success of the program, the governor's office actually sent representatives to come and watch the program, and they really got on board behind it.
So now is the program, because you talked about it being sort of the standard that's been put together, that's done this way over and over and over, I understand that.
Correct.
So is there some type of national association, an agency that has developed this curriculum, that this is being duplicated between state to state? Or like if I went from Texas to Louisiana or to New York, is it something different I'm going to experience there than what I would experience here?
If they call it PCIS, then it's pretty much copyrighted into the model that we use. There are similar programs, and if my memory serves, both Oklahoma and Arizona are examples of that, where they use a very similar model, but they sort of, when they decided to do this in their state, they changed it up a little bit. And so it's very similar, but it's slightly different. And so they call it something else other than PCIS. In Texas, in Louisiana, in New York, Virginia, in the Carolinas, and I think Georgia, it is called PCIS and follows this exact model.
Do you know if it's being used anywhere outside of the U.S. and other countries that have similar model or those things?
I'm not aware at this time. It was, like I said, it came originally from the United States military. The FBI had a similar thing back in the 80s that they began to do with federal agents, but really it was the military model that we adapted.
So how often do they put on a class? I mean, I guess you already talked that there's about 30 in the class or so.
Right.
So how often do they do this? How often can they do this?
Right. So once again, the funding would made all the difference in this deal. And so where it was before, the participants had to pay for to get there. They had to pay for their hotel and all of that sort of thing. Now we actually are able to provide all of that. So this training is absolutely no cost to the agency or the employee, and of course their spouse comes with them and stays and participates. And then if I didn't make that clear earlier, the spouses are in this program all the way, just like the officer is. And there's a separate, in the small groups, there's a separate spouse group, because spouses and family of law enforcement have unique experiences.
Sure.
And so they are able to kind of share what they've been through.
Yeah, their experience is totally different, because
absolutely,
the person coming home is not the same person that left.
You bet. And we've really seen success in terms of relationships and communication between spouses who've been through this program. But back to the funding, because the funding has come up, we do one about every 2 to 3 months now across the year. So it's really been amazing to see the governor's office support us.
Now, right now, it is only held at Sam Houston State in Huntsville, or does it travel?
It travels even now. We've been doing that for about 5 years, I guess, which is about as long as the funding's been going on. We've done three or four in the Midland Odessa area. We've done two in the Galveston area, one or two in the Valley, if memory serves. Another one somewhere to the north, maybe, or is that still planned and hadn't happened yet? I'm trying to remember. But we do travel, although most of them are held still in Huntsville.
Yeah. So now, are there certain standard, I guess, instructors, if the, I don't know if that's what you call them or not, but basically, are there a set group of people that are, I guess, at part of this? I know you talked about participants coming back later to be instructors or helpers.
Right,
or
peers.
Whatever, peers.
Yeah.
But I guess, is there a, obviously the person who just went through it coming back for their first time, is there someone who's sort of been there all along? Or
what we find is that obviously I've been involved since the very first PCIS in 2012. And there is a kind of a core group that is there most of the time that we're very blessed. In my case, I have a chief who is extremely supportive of the program and really works with my schedule so that I can help when we put a PCIS on. But then we also are always training new peers too to kind of increase our ranks so that you're not overworking the ones that you have. I think if you came to five PCISs in a row, you would probably see...
Start having more of your own personal issues again or something.
But I think you'd see kind of the same people for the most part with a few new faces here and there. To a great degree, I think it needs someone who's got a passion for it. There are people who really love the program who come and they get a lot out of it, but it is traumatic. I mean, you're experiencing really some vicarious psychological trauma in listening to these stories. These are tragic stories of what people have been through, what they've experienced, how it has affected them. And so in the similar way to counselors listening to people's problems all day long, this three-day program is pretty tough on the peers and MHPs as well. And so not everybody's really cut out for that. A lot of people understand the value of the program, but it just isn't for them to come back and kind of take that hit every 3 months. And I can tell you my own personal experience. When we run these things, I don't want to go to work the next day. You know, I need a day to sort of recharge and kind of process. What I've seen over the years, it's gotten a little easier. What you find is that it's the same stories, different faces, same reactions, same stories.
Yeah, that's right. That's sort of the purpose behind it, right? It is the event may not be normal. The reaction is normal.
The
body goes through is normal. The recovery is normal. And when I say normal, I mean, I hesitate to use that word because
it's personalized.
It is very specific
common.
To the individual.
That's right.
But we have seen what happens when you don't go and get help,
you
don't reach out to a peer, when you don't seek those who have been through it before. Because again, you have that individual feeling like, what's wrong with me?
Right.
You know, why is this only happening to me? Why if everyone else is fine?
Yeah.
Why am I experiencing this? Right.
It's fascinating to see when people come and they typically think one of two things, either my story's not that bad and I really don't have a right to be here, or my story is worse than anybody else in this room. No one's going to understand what I've been through. And then they start to tell their stories and the peers start off. I mean, we're the ones who are leading this thing. And so the peers will start off telling their own stories about what they've been through. I mean, kind of introduction, I've been through two officer-involved shootings, one of them fatal, and I've had two line-of-duty deaths where I served as a family assistance officer and had to try to walk through that process with the surviving family members. And so sharing those things, what you begin to see, what the participants begin to see, is that, oh, wow, there are people here who have been through really bad stuff, and they really do understand what it's like to try to process this. And you get people, the way that they support each other is fascinating. You can sit there and witness conversation where one officer will say to another, man, I don't know how you got through that. That is so bad. I don't know if I could have done that. And then the other officer says, wait a minute, man, your story is much worse than mine, you know? And so you begin to see that camaraderie of the walking wounded and the way that they are. And that's really the power of the program, the way they heal each other through just interaction.
I thought it was bad, but then I met you.
Right.
So where do people find information about the program?
If you go directly to the LEMIT website, and look for the programs. You're going to find PCIS, a post-critical incident seminar, and they'll have dates there. They fill up pretty quickly, but they'll have dates there and you can sign up for. We also, typically, if you're a command level person and you've got an officer that you know is in crisis and needs to get into this program quickly, they will make space, even if it's full. So if it says full, but you've got an officer in crisis, call LEMIT, call the
contact phone number on
whatever the deal is, and explain your situation to them. And many, many times they just they make a hole, or we'll pull an extra chair up. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out.
And I know we keep saying LEMIT, but I want to spell it out just in case we're saying it with a draw that you can't understand or otherwise. LEMIT, Law Enforcement Management Institute of Texas. You can Google that. It'll take you directly there. Many other classes that we talked about already, but certainly this program is very important to our officers that are out there, that are in crisis, that need help. We've talked about mental health many times on the show. It's just another avenue to provide that help. It's funded by the state. It is available, and we want to make sure that anyone who needs help has the opportunity to get it.
Absolutely.
So, you've been listening to Crime Scene Today. We are part of the IR Lone Star Community Radio family and featured on all major podcasts, currently listened to in 16 countries around the world. If you have a topic you would like covered, if you would like to be a guest on the show, or if you'd like to become a sponsor of the show, please contact me, Dan@crimescenetoday.com. We appreciate your continued support. We'll see you next week.